by the way, when you hear that, and I've heard this word a few times this week, where the fans of the Titans owe it to this team to show up on Sunday, what do you think?
I don't think that's a good way to put it. You know, I think I wrote some about the fans and the reaction to this after the game in Oakland. And, you know, I basically said, I think this team is worth your attention now. You know, I think it's okay to, you know, to dip your toe in the water, but owes it to them? No, I mean, this is a business. This is a professional sports team. And, you know, you're asking for good money from people, you know, to come to your games, and you should give them, you owe it to them to give them the product that attracts them. I don't think they owe them anything. You know, I think that's the wrong way to put it. Derrick Henry, I asked Derrick Henry after the game about, you know, the stadium, and he said it needs to be filled, needs to be packed. I mean, he kind of, you know, I wouldn't say called out the fans, but he was, you know, he was bold in the way he said it. But, you know, I mean, look, for the guys on the team, I think they know how much of a difference it can make when you have a stadium like that, and like they've, you know, encountered with other teams on the road.
Well, I mean, if we're talking about Georgia Bulldogs or something, I know your dog back in the background would agree with that. But here's the thing. I go back, and it's interesting when Derrick Henry, no offense to Derrick Henry, say that he takes makes a decision, a business decision for himself and his family to, you know, go elsewhere, you know, in the future. And say the Titans can't work out a deal, they don't put the franchise tag on him, and he moves on. Well, does he owe the Titans to play for the Titans if they don't give him a decent offer? Absolutely not. Does he owe it to the fans? Not. So anytime and here's the funny, ironic part. You never hear owners saying, hey, the fans owe this team to show up. You know why? Because of their TV contracts. You saw the latest TV ratings from Sunday. The Oakland-Tennessee Titans game drew a 27+. The TV ratings to the point where the NFL, you know, gives each team more than enough money to pay for the salaries before one single ticket is sold anyway. So, you know, the owners, you'll never hear owners griping about it, mainly because they need you've watching on the tube. So the bottom line is they want the TV contracts to continue to escalate.
Right. And they also understand that, you know, that it's their product and these are their customers, and you don't tell your customers they ever owe you anything. But you're right. It's more the players and coaches who, you know, understand that a full stadium can actually help them win, who might say stuff like that. But, yeah, no, listen, O is wrong. O is a bad word. It should never be used in this situation. What Derek said, you know, look, I mean, I guess I didn't have a problem with it. I thought it was a little bold. I think it's better to say, please come out. You know, we really appreciate you guys, and you would make a big difference. But, you know, he was feeling good after a game. And for the most part, you know, Derrick Henry is the kind of guy who I think fans can rally around and get behind. So, you know, I didn't have a big problem with it. But I'm going to be interested to see what it will look like Sunday. I have a feeling it'll be pretty good, I would expect. I mean, really, these crowds haven't been, you know, close to full, even when, like, you know, with the other team isn't bringing a bunch of people. But I thought the last couple of times they've still created pretty good atmospheres in there.
And that's true. But, you know, if you want to talk about owing, how about this organization owing the fans a home playoff game more than once a decade? And I mean, how about winning the division in 2016-17, Derrick Henry? I mean, if you want to talk about owing, I mean, because this team controlled their own destiny in those 2 years. And, yeah, great that the Titans went on the road and won a playoff game. How did that benefit the season ticket holders? Did they get a chance to go to Nissan Stadium and watch the game in person? Absolutely not. So if you want to talk about owing fans, how about the team owing the fans?
Did someone in the Titans use O?
No, but it's just calling them out. Calling them out, and I go back down that road because I really think this organization took this fan base for granted way too long. And, you know, I go back, and the 2 years to me that were angry fans turned to apathy was that 5-27 campaigns of those 2 years, and where this team wasn't spending their full salary cap. They were able to pocket money, tens of millions of dollars, because they weren't giving that extra player or two. And that's the problem that I have with this organization, even the hint that the fans are letting this team down. Because to me, the organization has let the fans down over the last decade.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's totally hear what you're saying. Again, like, my time here coincides with Amy Adams Strunk taking over, and so I came in and heard all those things, and basically, you know, there was a terrible relationship between the organization and the fan base, and there was, you know, they live in Texas and they don't care and all this stuff. And I've seen with my own two eyes, I've seen Amy do a lot of really good things. I think she's really done much to repair that, you know, and invest. And, you know, obviously I think they're doing a lot of things the right way, and that's why they have a better product too. I mean, they have at least gotten themselves to, you know, where they're in the hunt in December year after year, which is obviously way different from what it was when they were 5-27. But you also aren't going to just, you know, do that, snap your fingers and bring people back. And I also think, Johnny, that part of this has been boring football. I think boring football.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's part of what I wrote Sunday is, like, these guys are fun now. Like, I'm enjoying watching this team. You know, it's fun. I mean, they're winging it around the yard and scoring a lot of points and winning as well with some of the things that they've, you know, prioritized. And so, you know, I think the entertainment value of this team warrants, you know, more attention from fans now too.
And look, I was bringing up that same point over the last 3 years where, you know, one out of every five games, maybe it was entertaining. The four out of the five, I mean, you literally was having to inject caffeine into your bloodstream to stay awake.
Yeah, a lot of 17, 13 kind of games.
How many, you know this, in the press box, how many folks were literally pumping the extra caffeine, knowing that it was probably going to impact their sleeping later on Sunday night? How many were pumping in some extra Cokes or coffees or whatever just to, like, be alert in the second half for some of these games?
Yeah.
I'm not exaggerating that, am I?
Yeah. No, and of course, I'm a caffeine addict, so I would do that anyway, even if it was an exciting game, but yeah. Yeah, I mean, a lot of boring games, and you know, so I think that is part of it too. And people want, you know, this is entertainment, so be entertaining. And I do think Sunday, there's you know, they think you've got conditions Sunday for a possible, you know, both teams in the 30s kind of game here.
It really comes down, though, for the Titans because they are on the losing end of all the tiebreakers. That's why the Titans technically are not in first place. Record-wise, they are. But guess what? They wouldn't be in the playoffs right now today. They have to win both of these games against Houston. If they lose this week, they have to beat New Orleans, beat Houston again, and hope that Houston loses to Tampa Bay next week.
Yeah, which, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, if they get this one, I will not at all be surprised. Well, I won't be surprised if they're in position to win the division a week early, because Tampa Bay, you know, which just beat Indy, all over the map team, some really good wins this year, and probably should have won here in Nashville, by the way, and then we wouldn't even be having this discussion right now. But, you know, Jameis Winston, he leads the league in picks, but boy, he's also throwing TDs all over the yard too. So, I mean, if, you know, you look at the way the Texans played against the Broncos, I imagine they'll bounce back this week, but the Titans get them, you know, they really might have a chance to clinch it next week. Then the problem becomes, you know, you got to try to beat Drew Brees.
We get word that it looks like speaking of the salary cap, is going to be increased somewhere by about $8+ million next year. We look at the combined, what is it going to take to keep Ryan Tannehill and Derrick Henry, for example? I threw out a number earlier. Maybe it's a little low, but I threw out somewhere in the neighborhood of about $35 million a year. Your thoughts combined?
Well, that's a big number, you know, and you may be right. I mean, Tannehill, that price goes up week after week.
Yeah, that's true.
Him. You know, I think with Henry, I still think he's a really interesting case because, I mean, they've built really everything around him, and he's a very special player, and you have to have him, to me. I mean, and, you know, this hamstring thing is the first real hint of any kind of injury that he's had. So I think you can say at this point he's an awfully durable player. But I still think that you can compare him against other backs, you know, some backs who are so involved in the passing game, which is such a big part of NFL offense today. And I just think you should be able to, you know, pay him about $10 million and be fine. You know, he may not see it that way. His camp may not see it that way, but So then if you buy $10 million for him, then, you know, is Tannehill getting $25 million right now? Maybe. You know, $25 million
could be more.
It could be more.
Yeah. Now, if they had done that before the season, then no problem. But as each week goes, and if we're talking about the Titans winning the AFC South, I think that number does go up.
Yeah, and so as time has gone on here, because he's just been so good, and it's still such a contrast to 7 years with understanding different circumstances and all that. I do think more and more, I think the franchise tag for Tannehill could make sense. You get another year to make sure, and you have him under contract, and he gets paid a lot of money in that year. But then you're not committing yourself into his mid-30s and finding out that this was just an unbelievable hot streak. You know, I think that's got to be something discussed here. But I think also if you can get him, you know, at a good rate for a shorter, like a 3-year kind of deal, 3-4 maybe, you know, then I think that's still definitely worth exploring.
And I'll make that for everybody to relate to just last decade. Remember Vince Young and his hot streak? And look how that faded out and blew out real quick. So I will say this, if you do go that route, then it's to me, in the first two rounds, no later than the third, you better draft a quarterback in the draft in 2020.
Yeah, and I still think that that idea of going pretty high for a quarterback this year, you can't just discount that because of what Tannehill's doing right now. I really think, I mean, it's got to work out, and it's got to be – so much of this still depends on what's ahead the next few weeks. I mean, does he just rip through these next three teams and lead them in the playoffs, and they do damage there? You know, I think, like, you get to that, and again, then you're stacking this week after this week after this week. At some point, it might just become where it's like, you just have to, you've got to sign the guy. The open market's going to go crazy for this guy. But, you know, the first misstep, loss in which he plays poorly, you know, that changes things the other way a little bit, too. And you have to say, okay, see, he's not superhuman.
Well,
I still think it's like, you know, there's a lot of still waiting and seeing here in the short term.
Well, let's just put it out there, too. In these six games, Barry, you know, the breaks have gone the Titans' way, and these six wins in these last seven contests, Chargers could have been a loss. Tampa Bay could have been a loss. Kansas City could have been a loss. Indianapolis could have been a loss. I mean, remember, it was tied up, and Adam Vinatieri is kicking a kick to make a field goal that would have given the Colts a lead with under 6 minutes to go, set is blocked and taken back the other way. So before, you know, you're ready, and to your point, before you're ready to anoint Ryan Tannehill, not to take away from his success, but we obviously, in these same situations in this stretch where the Titans are 6-1, they could easily be like 2-5 or 3-4.
That's true. Now, I think especially those early ones, I mean, it's not like the offense came right out and was just rolling, you know. I mean, they had to grind out those wins. And like you said, you know, you fumble on a goal line stand, you know, Chargers, Bucks, and all that. You know, you look at the Indy game, and yes, the blocked field goal. Now, of course, then you think of the Tannehill bomb to Cleve Raymond. That was just such a perfect throw to clinch that game. So that sticks in your head. You know, obviously, he's torched some of these, you know, teams as well. I mean, his overall numbers, it's not just the winning. I mean, his numbers are outrageous. I mean, 9.8 yards per attempt is unbelievable. Our John Glennon had a really good story today about the really unique pairing of being one of the highest, having one of the highest completion rates in the league, along with one of the highest yards per attempt. Usually those two things don't go hand in hand, but they are with Tannehill. So it's also, you know, statistically and just the eyeball test, you watch him and he's quick with his decisions, he's accurate. So just his performance, I mean, you know, obviously there's a lot to like and not much to nitpick right now.
Joe Rexroad joining us again. I want to get your thoughts on this because I thought Sunday was a bad look for fans, you know, in the way also with this college football playoff committee, the way they took their time to release the top 25, which delayed the announcements of the bowl pairings as well. You know, I go back to the fan base, for example, for the Tennessee Vols. When the speculation early on, it was going to be Tennessee coming to Nashville. Oh, we deserve better than that. I mean, you were 7-5. You're 1-4 to begin the season. You lose to Georgia State and BYU. You know, you're very fortunate that anybody would want you in a bowl game at 7-5, all right? You're when you talk about traditions, one of the richest traditions in college football, and you are 7-5 this year. So stop with what the world owes you, for one thing. But the way the committee, you know, took their time releasing this information, I thought it presented 2+ hours of just bad publicity for the NCAA, college football in general, as a whole. And they've got to do something about it to improve. Because the bottom line is, the only debate was LSU, Ohio State, and which team of the group of five was going to be playing in the Cotton Bowl. Because obviously, looking at the top 25 rankings, the committee did not do anything, their job per se, as far as that final rankings. I thought they got very lazy. The way they ranked Wisconsin, the way they ranked Virginia. I mean, I thought they didn't put any time at all debating everybody else. So, you know, I don't know why it took so long for them to get their final 25 out in the first place, but it presented too many hours of that window there on social media. Too many things were being, you know, out there, and it was just, to me, I don't think the Music City Bowl deserves it. I don't think the Gator Bowl deserves it. I don't think college football as a whole deserves that lack of, you know, the problems they created for the entire bowl system, per se.
Yeah, it's annoying, and they should take an hour, and, you know, people tune in because they want to see the playoff pairings, and you know, and then they go hours. And of course, they're trying to keep people tuned into their TV show so they can spend hours analyzing these games and retaining viewers, I guess. But, I mean, I think most people are probably, if they're interested in football, probably tune into the NFL games once those kick off anyway after that first hour. You know, I don't like how it's done either. I mean, it's like the basketball section show stretching things out. I mean, just, you know, give us the bracket, give us the choices. And, yeah, you're right. Obviously, with the Tennessee thing, you had Brett McMurphy, who's a good reporter, reporting, you know, that it was done, that it was Tennessee, Louisville in the Music City Bowl, and so people are buying tickets. Other people are, you know, going with that, or I guess, you know, going with their sources on it too. And then it turns out that Tennessee changed its mind. You know, I mean, if you moved everything up and just get it all announced, then you probably avoid situations like that.
Your thoughts about, you know, here we are a week away from signing day, and I'm not going to say early signing day, because when 70% of your recruits are signing now, you have signing day next week, and then you have the late signing period in February now. But I bring it up because here's a Vanderbilt team underperformed this year on the football field. You had three outstanding talents there on the offensive side of the ball leading going into 2019. Unfortunately, we didn't see that play out on the football field. And you're talking about 10 of the 14 teams are currently ranked in the top 25 as far as recruiting classes nationally. And then you got Vanderbilt that's in the 60s. Give me a reason to be optimistic for 2020.
Well, I mean, what you just described is not really different. So, I mean, you know, Derek Mason's had some good teams that were built on those classes.
Worst recruiting class in 10-plus years. Worst, that's what we're talking about for Vanderbilt right now.
But I have to look back. But he's had some in the 50s and 60s before, right? I believe
not this well, not this low, not this
yeah,
low.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, it's hard to. I mean, it's hard to. And I know Vanderbilt lost a recruit to Northwestern, so that's probably, you know, a good player who is really focused on a great academic you know, situation, and so you flip to Northwestern, you know. It's hard to lose someone like that, you know, but that's, I mean, right now it's, although Northwestern didn't have a good year either, but there's a lot more history of success there, and they have great facilities, unlike Vanderbilt. So, look, it's going to be very hard to sell any excitement for this program in 2020. I think the main hope is Malcolm Turner. I mean, the main hope, I think, for excitement for Vanderbilt is that Malcolm Turner is able to, you know, come through with concrete plans for facility upgrades. And then that's something, of course, Derek Mason can use to sell on the recruiting trail. But, you know, until that is something that's real and not just sort of hinted at, and I do think, I expect something in the next few months on that. But, like, other than that, I can't think of anything. They're losing their best players, and they've got to figure out quarterback, and, you know, obviously the defense was really bad this year. Young, so, you know, those guys can get better, but really bad. So, It's going to be a real tough sell until they prove people wrong.
Hey, by the way, I want to bring up the job that Mark Hudspeth and what is happening over at Austin Peay. The fact that until two Saturdays ago, here's a program that had never could claim a win in the FCS playoffs. They accomplished that. They go on the road this past Saturday. They knock off the number three seed in Sacramento State. And this week they're playing on Friday night at Montana State. They're only a 6.5-point underdog to Montana State. I mean, look, they're one of eight teams that can win the national championship at the FCS level. The job that, you know, we go back to earlier this decade, a three-year period of time where they had one win in three seasons combined. We go from that to now being one of the last eight team standings. Just an incredible story going on over in Clarksville.
Yeah, and you know, Mark Hudspeth deserves a lot of credit. Obviously, you know, Will Singley turned that around, and so, you know, laid a lot of the foundation. But still, I mean, look at this is advancing that, and you know, it's crazy. I mean, it's hard to obviously to I guess compare these teams from different regions, because I don't think anybody expected Austin Peay to go out there and just bomb Sacramento State, but that's exactly what they did. And by the way, Sacramento State beat Montana State, so. You know, that's a name in the FCS playoffs that you expect every year to be right near the top. But, hey, I mean, I don't see how you can count them out. I mean, I know transitive football is always something you got to be cautious with, but it's been an incredible role. And like you said, you're talking about the, you know, and it was said many times when Will Singley took over the program, the worst football program in America, you know. And from that, really, people were saying that 4 years ago, 3 years ago, but 4 years ago for sure, to this, pretty remarkable.
And Will Healy's doing a great job still with Charlotte.
Oh, Will Healy.
Yes.
Will Healy.
That's okay. I wasn't going to, like, correct you. I was just going to, like, politely say his name right and move forward.
That
so you're good.
Very smooth of you.
Thank you. No,
something was wrong there in my mind.
It's Christmas. I'm not going to call you out that way. Hey, look, it happens when you're trying to remember.
I have a Will Singley, by the way, so shout out to Will. Yeah.
I have that problem all the time when I, you know, working in athletics, having to, you know, to remember 200-plus names when you look at all the sports every year and the changeover, and I couldn't even remember Cousins' name, so I totally understand that. But I just love stories like that. I remember getting to know Coach Hudspeth when he was head coach in North Alabama. I used to have him on my show every week when I first started doing this down in Huntsville, and so I've watched his career play out over the last 10 years, and I thought he was a natural. And, you know, the funny thing is he's not surprised by this. He knew that, you know, going back to the spring, that he had the kind of team and the capabilities. And I think the team understands that, too. They don't feel like they're an underdog. And that's when you're talking about a dangerous team, when they're not coming in just glad to be there. They're coming in with the attitude, hey, we're better than you. We're going to show it on the football field.
Yeah, and they did emphatically last week. So really, really interesting to see if they can keep it rolling.